It seems like everyone is either starting a side hustle or becoming their own boss. And you know what they're hearing a lot? It's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Sign up for a £1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/sell23, all lowercase. Whether you're selling loafers or peace lilies, Shopify simplifies selling online and in person. Covering all sales channels, from a shop front POS system to its all-in-one e-commerce platform, Shopify even gets you selling across social media marketplaces. With their 24/7 help and extensive business calls library, Shopify is ready to support your success every step of the way. Go to shopify.co.uk/sell23 to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.co.uk/sell23.
All right, welcome back to another Baseball America Top 30 podcast. Today, we are talking about the Detroit Tigers coming off one of their best seasons in probably about a decade here, JJ. I am your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, as always on these podcasts, it seems, is JJ Cooper. JJ, you handle the Tigers list. This is one of our top farm systems in the recent farm system rankings.
Number two, which is the highest that the Tigers have ever ranked. And, you know, we talked about this with the Red Sox. And we're like, you know, they've been number two before. They haven't been number one. Maybe they should be number one.
Yeah.
In the case of the Tigers, nope, they shouldn't. Nope, I'm just going to say that they're number two right now. And I can't really think that they should have been higher than this before. I will say, Jackson Job is the highest ranked Tigers prospect we've had on our top 100 ever at number three. Mm. And on that one, I will say, in hindsight, Justin Verlander, you can easily make the argument that Justin Verlander should have ranked higher. The thing that's tricky with Verlander is he wasn't in the minors, understandably, very long. Yep. That's the kind of thing that happens. Like when you could say with Albert Pujols, you could say he should have been number one. It's like, yeah, but he jumped to the big league straight from low A after being a 13th round pick. Kind of not a whole lot of times to recalibrate to catch up to that. But in the case of Job is the highest ranked Tigers prospect in top 100 history, which goes back to 1990. And the Tigers have never ranked this high on farm system rankings, number two on their farm system rankings. And that goes back to 1984. So coming off of a playoff appearance, this is a pretty good time for Tigers fans, I would say.
Yeah, it seems like the new regime there has definitely done some work and some heavy lifting and sort of remaking the system. It almost seems like on the fly because, you know, it was only a couple years ago when I started. I think we had the Tigers King cover, you know, talking about Casey Mize, talking about Riley Green, talking about Spencer Torkelson. Those guys.
And Terrence Skubal, who we had ranked higher than Casey Mize, I will point out.
Yes. And then, you know, obviously Terrence Skubal. So I think that, you know, sort of puts into perspective some of those guys worked out. Some of them certainly didn't. But they've been able to consistently keep talent and draft really well. And I think we've seen some shifts in how the organization sort of attacks and develops as well. But let's just jump right into it. We talked about Jackson Job. You mentioned he is the highest rated Tigers prospect in the history of the top 100 list, as long as we've been doing that now going on, I guess, three, four decades. Talk to me about how good can Jackson Job be? Are we talking about a top five pitcher in the game, potential Cy Young winner, or more of a really strong number two?
If everything breaks right, he could. He could be a front of the rotation ace. Now, you always hesitate to say that because most guys who we put that on never reach that. Now, Terrence Skubal, the Tigers have one. Terrence Skubal, you could say, like when he was coming up through the minors, you could say his stuff is such that if it all breaks right, he could be a front of the rotation ace. Most guys don't turn out that way. Terrence Skubal did. You win the Cy Young Award, you have a season like he just had where basically leads the league in ERA, leads the league in wins, has 192 innings, leads the league in strikeouts, wins the Cy Young. You're an ace. By every definition, you're an ace. Now, with Job, if you said, okay, could he be that? Yeah. I mean, pure stuff wise, I think the way we wrote it up in the prospect handbook and on the site at baseballamerica.com is his stuff. And I want to ask you about this because you love to dive into the nitty gritty of the analytics and all and the numbers and all too, but his stuff is almost like if you designed a pitcher in a lab in some ways, in that you can get, if you were taking Jackson Job and MLB The Show, you can still turn the sliders up a little bit more. You know, you could add a little bit more to his fastball. You could add a little bit more to his breaking ball. You could do a little bit more, but you can't do that much more because on basis of pure stuff, it's really high top end tier. Is it not, Jeff?
Yeah. And I think he just has the ability to do things like the way he can backspin that fastball efficiently, create ride with higher spin rates too, which I think sort of adds to all that. And a lot of arm side run. It's a really unique sort of fastball shape, unique fastball plane. I think it's almost comparable to Gerrit Cole in some ways, just in terms of how unique that shape is, how well he moves down the mound, all that sort of stuff. And then you factor in, you know, his ability to spin a breaking ball. And there's not a lot of guys that can do both of those. We're now seeing him, kind of mess with some different shapes. We saw some video.
He loves to mess with them. He loves to get into the nitty gritty too.
Exactly. With a cutter, you know, now he's got this harder curveball that was like 85 with significant drop, mixing in a sinker as well that I think, you know, at least what we saw in the lab hit 100 miles an hour. We'll see what it's like out in the wild. Numbers are never the same as they are in the lab because it's a very controlled environment with a really, you know, like sort of springy mound that you can really get some great push off of. But I think we've seen this guy develop over the last couple of years, how good the pitch mix is, his ability to do so many different things that if he can ride it, sink it, you know, spin it, you know, he's like one of those toys where like you pull it, pop it, hit it, you know, drop it, whatever. It's like, he just does a little bit of everything. And that's just really unique. There's not a lot of guys that are just physically capable of doing those things.
The thing I'll say about that is like, you mentioned Casey Mize, right? Casey Mize was the number one pick in a draft class. A number one pitcher in the draft class, he really stood out. There's never been a day in Casey Mize's career at the peak of Casey Mize's powers that his stuff compared to Jackson Job. Is that a fair way to put it? Like, Job's fastball is better than Casey Mize's fastball has ever been. Pre-injury, all that. Job has more plus pitches than Jackson Job ever had. Job has more ways of attacking a hitter than Jackson Job ever had. And I would throw on top of that, I think that Job has better control too. Now, I mean, I know I'm now comparing someone like Casey Mize has battled injuries. We haven't seen Casey Mize have kind of that dominant big league career yet. I mean, so I'm comparing him to someone, but Casey Mize was considered, you know, the consensus top pitching prospect in the draft class. And I'm just laying it out like Jackson Job's just like should be better.
Yeah. I think it's even hard to compare the two. Mize never threw as hard, never created the sort of shapes from the release traits that Job does. Certainly never had feel for spinning a breaking ball at this level. Had a pretty good splitter, you know, had a pretty good changeup, and I think
that really good splitter
well for him. And obviously has dealt with a lot of injury stuff, even dating back to when he was in college. So when you look at the point that Job is at right now, at the age he's at right now, he's already sort of surpassed those expectations. And I think it's one of the reasons we think he has a much higher floor and also a much higher ceiling.
The biggest question that we still have to see with Jackson Job is he has been challenged to stay on the mound. And it's not been, he's been cut on and his elbow's been, reworked, he's on his third elbow ligament or anything like that. It's nothing like that. But he's had, you know, it's been a lumbar spine inflammation. Last year it was a hamstring. A hamstring's not an injury where you go, oh no, this guy just can't hold up. But it did cost him time. And so one of the tricky things we'll see is we are talking about someone who will turn 23 during the season. I mean, they're going to have kind of the Jackson Job plan this year of not just saying, here you go, you're in a rotation, you know, 30 plus starts, here we go. And can we, you know, can we expect a solid 180 innings out of you? No, you're probably not going to expect that in 2025. But I will say, if you're the Tigers and you're mapping this out like a dream scenario for 2025, having made the playoffs last year, so you're not being crazy if you say we start this time last year saying we start the season with our goal is to win in October. It worked out, but like you may have been like, wow, that's optimistic. You know, good luck. Now, having done that last year and having shown what a guy like Skubal being as good as he is can do in the postseason, the kind of dream scenario is you want to figure out how you have Jackson Jobe ready to go at his best in September, October, where if you've got Tarek Skubal and Jackson Jobe pitching at their best in October, well, then all of a sudden the Tigers, especially if you're in a three-game series, that's a nightmare matchup for anyone because they have the guys who really could be like, I don't care what you have tonight for seven innings, you're just not going to do anything.
Yeah, 100%. And there's even some more interesting arms kind of as we get further down this list. But let's talk through this top five. It's a really interesting top five. It's an especially talented top three. And as you look at it, you know, outside of Jobe, though, I guess he would be technically up the middle. It's all up the middle players, which is, I always think, the right place to sort of build from. And those guys, you know, usually have the defensive capabilities and abilities to move to the corners in different spots if need be. So talk to me a little bit about Clark versus McGonagall at 2 and 3. Of course, two very highly rated prospects in our top 100. Both guys that, you know, have high grades, 60 grade, you know, BA grades on them. There's not many guys in the game that have that in the position side. How difficult was it to sort of parse through and decide Clark or McGonagall? And why did you ultimately go with Clark?
By the way, I will note that of all the position players up to until you get to number 19 on this list, every position player, with the exception of one, is an up the middle player, either a catcher, a middle infielder, or a center fielder. And that one is Jace Young, who they're playing him at third, but I think his best position, you know, if could be second or better position, I say maybe, you know, so like there is a lot of up middle guys here. But yeah, when you talk about Clark and McGonagall, I could make the argument like Max Clark obviously is the guy who has been famous for longer, was kind of part of that very interesting challenge of figuring out for the Tigers, okay, who do we take, right? They, in a five-player draft, they were sitting there, and he'll probably be compared to Wyatt Langford and Walker Jenkins for the next 10 years because of that, understandably, right? Now, it is worth noting, you get Clark, if you go Langford, you know, you might not get McGonagall too. Like, and that's where I think the key thing happens here is they got Clark and they got McGonagall in that draft, and McGonagall has kind of shown himself to be very much part of that same discussion. And I would say I can see the argument for either one of them at two. The argument for Clark is longer track record. He is a center fielder. He's got a hit for average. Power should be solid power. Runs, does everything. The argument for McGonagall is like, okay, is he going to be a shortstop long-term? We'll see. I think that's still a fair question, but he's going to play in the dirt. He's going to be a solid defender in the infield. He could probably, his hit tool might be as good or better than Max Clark's. And that's where it gets really interesting. You are talking about two potentially premium bats at up the middle positions. I kind of said like this, you know, this will be the interesting year to see, but if you told me that the end of this year that we flip this and McGonagall is ahead of Clark, wouldn't shock me. They're that close together. I think we've kind of had them very close together, always with Clark slightly ahead. But when we talk about them for top 100 and all, they've often been kind of almost paired with each other because you can make the argument for either one of them.
Yeah, and I think both of them had good seasons. I was certainly surprised by the output, the amount of power and impact that, you know, was in McGonagall's bat. And he's a little twitchier than I had expected as well. You know, it's an unusual body type. He's definitely a smaller, more diminutive player, but incredibly talented. So, you know, good for him and good on the Tigers and landing both of those guys in the same draft too.
So I would say, like, the thing we want to see with him, right? Like, we've already seen, to his credit, we have seen that, again, he's a better shortstop than the pre-draft scouting reports. Like, there were evaluators, you know, there were evaluations coming out of high school where you said, like, okay, he's probably moving by now. Mm-hmm. It's still possible he moves, right? Like, especially, I'll go back to, especially for a team that just took Bryce Rainer, you know, first round, there could be a point, you know, where I think kind of the ideal scenario that you have as a team is at some point you have a guy who's a playable shortstop and he gets moved to another position because you got someone better than him. Now, let's be clear. This is a change for the Tigers, right? When we talk about Clark, when we talk about McGonagall, the previous wave of most of those Tigers position player prospects, Parker Meadows being the significant exception to this, but that previous wave was a whole lot of hitters. And then you said, well, what about their defense? And you said, well, they're working to see if Colt Keith can play second base. And eventually they're now saying, okay, he's really probably a first baseman. Well, we're seeing if Justin Henry Malloy, who they acquired from the Braves, can play third base. And eventually they said, well, he's going to be more of an outfielder. Well, we're going to see if Jace Young can play third base. And they're still trying that one. And there's still kind of an open question of that. So there were a lot of guys who kind of came up in that last wave where the bats came up and it was like, okay, but we got to figure out where they're going to play defensively. We got to figure out if they can play somewhere impactful defensively. This group is coming, Parker Meadows again being the exception of that. Riley Green came up as, oh, you can, he's a center fielder, but he'll probably end up in a corner. Get up in a corner. But in that case, I would say that's more of what you're hoping happens with McGonagall if you're the Tigers, which is he got moved out of there to a corner in part because Parker Meadows is really good in center field. And to Parker Meadows and the Tigers' credit, that was a slog to get there. But Parker Meadows is a much better hitter now than he was when he was drafted. And he's got himself to being a useful player at the plate, which then allows everything else he does to really play. And that really makes everything play much better in the outfield now, because now you're talking about, you've got this gold glove caliber center fielder who moves a fringy center fielder to a corner in Riley Green. Kind of also means that you have less time for, you have Kerry Carpenter more in the DH, less in the outfield, you know, all that. And turn around, it's like, okay, this is all kind of working out pretty well. And this is a, as opposed to a time where it wasn't that long ago that they just didn't have position player prospects coming up in this organization for almost like a decade. There was a stretch there where it was like, who's coming up? It's like, as a hitter's not much. Now they got a lot.
Yeah. And let's talk a little bit about some of those hitters. Perfect segue there, JJ. It's almost as if you had seen the outline of this podcast. Lots
we're
of
just winging it. Like, what are you talking about? We haven't even talked at all about what we're going to talk about.
So lots of catchers. We have three catchers in the top 10. There's four in the top 20. That's a lot of catching. And guys at sort of different points, different sort of profiles across the board. Some of them I would say, others more defensive catchers. So talk to me through about, you know, ranking out these catchers, particularly at the top here with like Theron Loranzo, you know, Dylan Dingler, who of course we saw at the major league level and have heard about his defense for many years. And then Jose Briseño, who dealt with some injuries, was a name that had popped in FCL the previous year, but also in AFL this year, really put on a show, particularly while I was out there. I think he had a three-homer game or whatever. It was remarkable. So talk to me a little bit about Briseño. Talk to me a little bit about Loranzo and Dingler and sort of how you had to rank those guys up.
So I'm going to start with Dingler. I know that Loranzo ranks higher and Loranzo is a top 100 prospect. But the reason I want to start with Dingler is for one, we have seen him in the major leagues. But the other is he is the kind of guy who, when you talk about prospect rankings and all, it's kind of easy to forget about guys like this because He was a 2020 second round pick out of college. It does seem like it's taken him quite a while to reach the majors. And, you know, he will turn 27 during the season. So we don't want to make it sound like this is a 21-year-old and who's on a massive ascending path. But defense has always been good. Last year, he really made strides at the plate in AAA. And that kind of meant, when the Tigers were doing that very kind of interesting trade deadline where they were kind of selling off, but also setting the stage for their run to the playoffs, they traded away Carson Kelly and basically said, Dylan Dingler, you're now the backup. I've been saying for a couple of years, basically, if you said, well, what is a comp for Dylan Dingler? The answer is Jake Rogers. You don't have to go far to try to figure out what he looks like in the majors, because it's the guy who he's now backing up. A little further along in his career. Both of them were considered really good defensive catchers coming out of college. Both of them had some power. Both of them concerns about the hit tool. Now, I could see, if you said, well, how does this go long term? The Tigers have been okay with Jake Rogers as their starting catcher. Now the question is going to be, at some point, do they decide, okay, now we're ready to hand that off to Dingler, or this might be an improvement, is, okay, taking it back to Thyron Lorenzo. If Thyron Lorenzo continues to develop by 26 or 27, is he ready to take over as this starter? Which then Dylan Dingler in that scenario is kind of like a perfect type of backup catcher in that good defensively. He does have the home run pop to kind of give you that, it was a limited exposure, but he did hit 167 in the majors last year. I mean, I'm not, I know he hit 300 in AAA. If you get 230 out of him in a normal year, you're going to feel pretty good about that. But if he hits 230 with, 10 to 15 homer type power, that kind of defense, you're going to be happy with that. He's kind of the less sexy one. Now that kind of takes us back to the top 100 prospect, Thyron Lorenzo, who, while they were clearing the decks to let Dingler step up to the big leagues by trading away Carson Kelly, at the same time, Lorenzo was one of the key guys they got in the Jack Flaherty trade. And you're talking about a switch hitting catcher who's ticketed to head to AA this year. That's, he hit in the AFL. He hit after the trade with West Michigan, which, by the way, West Michigan is not a fun place to hit, as Tigers fans know. There's a lot of possibilities here. Now, if Dingler is kind of what you've got, Thyron Lorenzo is like, there's still a significant question here of what is he going to be, right? And I would say with that, the real question becomes, defensively, is he going to be good enough? Because right now he's not. He's an A ball, but he's not. He's going to have to be better than he is now to say you're our catcher. Now, he's young. He will not turn 22 till midseason. That's understandable. You haven't mastered every little aspect of behind the plate. He has shown a willingness. He has the aptitude and the desire to do it. That's a key part with a catcher. If you're a catcher and you don't want to embrace, I always say, you don't want to embrace the suck that is being a catcher, then you're going to have some trouble, because it is a grind unlike any other position. Those shortstops, those outfielders, all of them, they get to do the fun stuff in, before the games. You get to go and catch bullpens. Not necessarily even because you need the work, although you do, but because someone's got to catch the bullpens. And some of the times that's going to be you. Some of you, you've got to work with your pitchers. You've got to go through those extra, everyone else gets the hitting scouting report and they get to see what the pitcher is going to do. You're there for that. But then you're also there for the one where you go with your pitcher and go through their hitters. And so there's just so much more to it. We've seen with Dylan Dingler, catchers often develop more slowly. Lorenzo's ahead of the game right now. And I want to kind of kick it back to you a minute. You also got to see him, I believe, in the AFL. The key thing, I talked about the defense and how it needs to improve. But if you said, well, why would you be excited about this guy? There aren't a whole lot of catchers who can hit like Thyron Lorenzo, right?
Yeah, and it's just, it's easy power from both sides of the plate. The approach is pretty good as well. You know, there's some swing and miss concerns, but I think at a level that you're not all that concerned about, especially with what the offensive bar is at the position. You know, and he has enough skills behind the plate and a big enough arm that he does have the ability to potentially stick there. It's just a matter of, you know, how does the framing develop? How does the blocking develop? You know, how does he use different setups and all that stuff? And how does it work out for him? But I think he is somebody that when you talk to scouts and you get a look at him, you don't completely write off the idea that he's going to be able to stick a catcher long term.
I don't either. Now, okay, and so that'll be the perfect segue to the last of these catchers in the top 10, which is Jose Briseño. And Briseño, there's much more concern about whether he can stay behind the plate. At this point, I would say if you were putting odds on it, you would put those odds at less than 50% that Jose Briseño is going to be a catcher in the major leagues. Not because he can't do it, but because, well, a couple of things. One, he did have a knee injury that cost him a significant amount of time this year. And knee injuries for catchers always raise a little bit of a concern, especially for a dude who's still, you know, he will turn 21 after the 2025 season's basically wrapped up. So you got a young guy who's already had a knee injury. He did really use it, better condition, gotten better condition and all, embrace getting strength gains and all that. But you say that in part because he's already at the upper end of will this body play as a catcher? He is a bigger catcher, right? Like, doesn't mean he can't, but again, all of these things kind of point to here are ways that it could slide away, which is as he's turning 24, 25, is he still going to have the flexibility back there? Is he still going to have the mobility? Are his knees going to hold up? Again, he's already had a knee problem already. Are his knees going to hold up if he's 6'4", 220, 230? That's, you know, again, as a fully mature big leaguer. But again, the other thing I'd say with that, and I'll kind of kick it back to you, because also, I mean, he had the AFL of all AFLs, you know, the Arizona Fall League Triple Crown winner. You know, he hit .433 in the AFL. Pitching's not the best in the AFL, we admit, but he won the Triple Crown there. His bat very well could also make him the Tigers' first baseman of the future, would be another possibility.
Yeah, I would even go out as far as to say there's a less than a 5% chance that he sticks behind the plate. I've even heard from people in the organization, he may not even catch much this year. Even prior to the knee injury, like I saw him in FCL in 2023.
Yeah, you wrote up a good report about him, if I remember right.
And even just like watching him sort of like do pregame work where they're working on blocking and stuff like that, he just doesn't move very well. And he's not comfortable in the crouch all that much in comparison to the guys that typically stick behind the plate. He's a hitter. He's got the big body for first base. He's got the bat for first base. I think what you like about him is it's almost comparable like a Vinny Pasquantino, where he has this combination of good swing decisions, kind of outlier bats of ball ability for the type of power hitter that he is. There's big raw power there. He's got the ability to elevate. He can hit the ball out to any part of the ballpark, hit a variety of pitch types and locations. There's not much that you can sneak by Briseño. And I think for that reason, he may actually be a good enough catcher, good enough hitter, to sort of move off of a premium position to a place like first base or DH and sort of stay above board because of the ability of that bat. And it's just, you don't see many guys that have sort of all of those attributes and combinations and blend them as well as Briseño does.
But again, that's where having more catchers than you can play catchers in the big leagues is not a bad thing. And then again, there are other catchers in their top 30 as well. It is an enviable position, I would say, to have this many plausible catchers in your organization, especially for a team that now has, in Jake Rogers and Dylan Dingler, a 1-2 at the big league level. Now, you know, those aren't Jake Rogers, Dylan Dingler. You're not expecting to, you know, you're not saying, oh, we have the best catching duo in the league, but you are saying we are in a better situation than a whole lot of teams out there. And that means they don't have to, I'll put it this way. Sometimes what happens, Briseño again, his bat is going to be so far ahead of his glove that if they do want to keep him a catcher, at some point you hit that point where you're like, the bat's ready for double A, the glove's ready for low A. What do we do here, right? In Lorenzo's case, it's not that clear of a distinction. But if you said, we want Lorenzo to catch, so we're willing to spend a whole year in double A, that's why I said 27, whole year in double A this year, a whole year in triple A next year, which is still going to make him a relatively young big leaguer, where you said, hey, and in 27, we think by that extra work, he'll be ready to catch in the big leagues. Well, they don't have a reason to rush because that kind of works out perfect for them. Jake Rogers was arbitration eligible this year. He will be arbitration eligible next year for the final time, and then he'll be a free agent for 27. So if you're mapping this out, the ideal scenario for the Tigers probably is Jake Rogers plus Dylan Dingler 25. Jake Rogers plus Dylan Dingler 26. 27, Dylan Dingler plus Thyron Lorenzo. And in that scenario, you're not asking Lorenzo when he comes up, hey, you've got to be the guy from day one. You're bringing him up and you're like, it's going to be a job share. Secretly in the back of your mind, you're hoping that Lorenzo kind of just basically goes out, balls out. And you're like, yeah, this guy's going to be the guy. And Dingler kind of slides into more of a veteran backup role. But that kind of maps out pretty well. That's a pretty good scenario for how this could work out for the Tigers.
100%. And I think even when you look at Briseño, because of how quickly he's sort of moved and certainly that AFL and where he could end up next year, he's going to be 20 for all of the season. Didn't turn 20 years old until September 23rd. So the entirety of the minor league regular season, he's going to be 20 years old, signed in 22. He's not even Rule 5 eligible until 2026, which isn't always the case with international signees. We don't see them come stateside and move that quick and sort of progress. So he may even have some time to improve or learn another position. So it'll be interesting to watch that. We did a really good job here, JJ, of digging into the top 10 and the major names to know, the names that people are asking about and clamoring for more information on. But we're going to take a bigger picture approach right after this break.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
All right. And we're back. JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce. We are talking Tigers top 30 prospects. So JJ, we talked about the top 10. We talked about how talented the system is. They ranked 2 overall among the 30 systems. We ranked out the talent rankings after the release of our top 30 and the release of our top 100 list. That said, the major league team was pretty good last year as well. Do you anticipate that trend continuing, or do you anticipate maybe some regression in 2025?
So this is where this gets interesting. It was the best Tigers team in quite a while. It was a playoff team. And at the same time, it had some real flaws. Like, there is a reason they sold off at the deadline. There is a reason that they did not say, oh, we're going to really bulk this team up. At the deadline, they're like, I don't know if this is our year. And then it turned into their year, to their credit. But, like, you know, they didn't have a third baseman in the postseason. Let's just be clear. They were looking around and they were like, yeah, okay, Matt Vierling, Zach McKinstry, yeah, sure, you're our third baseman. They spent most of the year with, I mean, Javier Baez has had a good career, but let's just be clear. Javier Baez was like a whirlpool that pulled things in its wake into, you know, like he was not the answer at shortstop last year, really in any kind of way. And so they get Trey Sweeney. I can't imagine that when they traded for Trey Sweeney at that time, they're like, this is going to be our postseason shortstop. But it was. Now, and what I mean by all of this is a team that managed to make the postseason where the plan that they had at third base, I think really was Jace Young to be their third baseman by the second half of the year. And defensively, by the end of the year, they're like, he's just not playable here right now. And I think that's a fair assessment. We'll see if he can get better at it. But last year, he was not a playable defender at third base. And that's why they effectively benched him before the postseason. Colt Keith was barely playable at second, you could say a lot of the time. Like, bat, you know, came along, but like, okay, so that was kind of a question. The outfield ended up being way better than we would have expected. Riley Green, who we've always loved, but Riley Green was really good. Parker Meadows was really good. And I would say that Kerry Carpenter has kind of showed, man, you kind of love him as he was the guy that I would say in the postseason, he was the Tigers hitter that you're like, oh, we can't let him face a righty, you know, in a key situation. You got that. But I do think that this team is one that's going to, that other than the fact that you should expect some aggression from Tarek Skubal because few pitchers follow up a year that good with another year that good. But other than this, I don't think there's really a whole lot of guys you point to here and say that was the career year that you're going to see all these guys. There was a lot of positions where you could say this team could be better at this point this year than it was with these guys last year. So, and I would say the other kind of the question then, like, we've already seen they extended Colt Keith long, you know, well, early before basically really become a established big leaguer. Can they extend Skubal? That would be like he's the only player that they have coming up towards free agency anytime soon. He'd be like, you really can't let that guy go. I mean, because obviously if you take away Skubal, who might not be extendable at this point, you know, he's not that far. He is two seasons away from free agency. I know he's had injuries in the past, but if he has a 25 season anywhere close to what he had in 24, the man is going to get paid. The man is going to be literally the best pitching pitcher on the market when he hits free agency. So, but other than that, this is a young team where the players who they have, we talked about Jake Rogers a couple years away. They've got a plan for that. There's a lot of plans that they have. I think adding Gleyber Torres is like, like a kind of a buy low candidate works out really well for them. I would say that this team, I don't know if they're going to be better in 25, but it should be better in 26. Right now, the ideal world is you're a little better in 25, which means that you're really ready to take off in 26. But the reason I say that is by 26, Jackson Jobe should be an established member of the rotation. Tarek Skubal's still there. Max Clark by that point, Kevin McGonigal should be established parts of the lineup. If you add Max Clark, again, in this dream scenario for them, if you have Riley Green, Parker Meadows, and Max Clark in the outfield, that's three center field types all playing in the outfield. You're going to get great defense, and you should get above average offensive production too. If you can kind of figure out, like with McGonigal, can he play short? Or even if he can't, is he your kind of your long-term answer at second base, or is it third or whatever? These are all good, you know, Thyron Lorenzo, maybe by some point in that year. There's more here than there's been for quite a while. It's a team that may have been a little bit ahead, I think, of where we expected them to be last year. But there's a reason that, again, the other part we should say about this is if this year they need to do the opposite, they traded away Jack Flaherty, they traded away Carson Kelly, they traded, you know, if this year, instead of trading guys away, if they need to add, there's enough here in the system to really like, hey, you want a catcher? We've got catchers. Hey, you want, a Jaden Ham? Do you want, you know, guys like that? Like there's the bullpen. They've got arms who should help them in the bullpen this year, I would say, you know. And then the other part of this is we'll see, but like they've done a better job of helping these guys develop. I think that when it comes to pitching development, especially the thing about the Tigers, you know, we talked about this before, I think, but they clearly with their starters, they want them to have multiple pitches, multiple approaches. Here's how I'm going to get right-handers out. Here's how I'm going to get lefties out. And they're, if that means that you need to add a platoon neutral pitch, they'll work with you on adding a platoon neutral pitch. If that means that you need to be two different kind of pitchers, and so I'm going to be fastballs and sliders, you know, if I've got the platoon advantage, and I'm going to be splitters or changeups and sinkers or something else if I'm, you know, facing a, you know, a lefty as a righty or a righty as a lefty, they've done a really good job of that. Like they're doing a good job of helping pitchers maximize their success. Cater Montero, in a lot of organizations, I think would have been kind of pushed into a bullpen role. We really like your stuff. Now pitch out of the pen. They looked at it and said, we think you can get 12, 14, 15, sometimes 18 outs. That's been really useful for them. I do think that this is, yeah, there's a lot to that. They're not going to draft at the top. They hope they don't get to draft at the top of the draft like they've been doing. They're not going to have any more Bryce Rainers or Max Clarks or Kevin McGonigal's coming through where it's like, oh, this is the advantage you get from drafting at the top of the draft. But I would say on a development side, on an identifying hitter side, they're doing a really solid job.
Yeah, I would agree 100%. I think they do have that depth to either supplement the major league team this year or, you know, trade away pieces, whether it's some of those guys that you mentioned, or even, you know, trade away and upgrade spots with maybe some young major leaguers if they feel that's what's sort of needed to take that next step forward. And I think, you know, the funny part of all this is that they traded away Jack Flaherty and he came right back like a boomerang. So, you know, that's kind of fun. You know, it was funny to see how that works out, and he'll be playing alongside the guys he was traded for less than a year ago. And here's the final question of every prospect podcast that we put together. And it's probably, as I always say, my favorite question. Give me some of the names or one particular prospect that outside the top 10 that you sort of view as someone that could maybe take a big step forward this year, or a name that at least Tigers fans, prospect files really need to know.
Okay, this one I'm going to cheat a little bit on because these are guys who are just outside the 10, but I think they're both really interesting to talk about. We mentioned Jaden Ham a little bit. If this system was thinner, if this system was a normal Tigers system, Jaden Ham would be a top 10 prospect, right? Like there are guys who are just ahead of him. You can put him we put Brant Herter in the top 10 because Brant Herter is a big leaguer, and I think Brant Herter is going to be a useful big leaguer for quite a while. But Jaden Ham, I think that there is some question about Ham being a reliever long-term. They were very cautious with him, I would say, as far as they left him in West Michigan all year, which I would say at the start of the year, it wasn't a particularly conservative assignment, but to keep him there all year when he was pitching as well as he was a conservative assignment to say, this guy was a 2023 college draftee. You're going to keep him there all year. There is the delivery. There are some thoughts that there are markers that could make him either a reliever or let's just say like a 1.5 to 2 times through the order guy, more than a 3 times through the order guy. But that said, when his stuff was at its best, and it did back up at times a little bit, maybe that's why they kept him in A ball. But, you know, it's an over the top fastball with carry with that slot. It kind of makes it, you know, you expect a little bit of that, but like it works. The curveball really pairs with 12-6 curveball that pairs with it. There are pieces there to be at least a reliever, maybe even more. And then the other one who was a pickup, another trade pickup for them a couple years ago out from the Phillies was Haoyu Lee, futures gamer. We got to see him there. And what's interesting with him is everyone's always liked the bat, the hitting ability, pure hitter. You know, this guy's a pure hitter. Does not look like a second baseman. I would say squattier on the thicker side, but there is a divide, right? Which is when you talk to scouts about him as a defender at second, they're like, he could be okay, right? he's fine. They won't go further than that. But when you talk to people about what the analytics say, you know, about his defense in the minors, they're like, it's really good. It stands out. It jumps off the page, kind of. Now, we'll see which of those is, you know, kind of like whether the eye test or the data is kind of the long-term indicator there. But like, there are some reasons where you think maybe he's a little bit better. I would say that what it probably, as I tried to square that circle, you know, kind of blend everything, I would say that he doesn't have great range, but he makes every play he gets to, and he's very consistent, and those things kind of stand out, especially if you're positioned well. So those are two that are really interesting. I will then, just to make up for doing a top two guys who are just like that, the one that'll be really interesting to watch this year is Paul Wilson, who's the son of Trevor Wilson, had a really terrible year last year, let's just be honest. But this was a guy who was their third round pick out of Oregon a couple of years ago. Want to see if he can bounce back, because if he can, it's a lefty with real stuff. Everything just fell apart. He needs to kind of have a bounce back year after a really rough 2024. I'll just put him out as his, he'll be one. I'll be very interested to see what he looks like in spring training and going forward, whether he makes an assignment. A full season ball would be a really, like, if he's on an opening day roster in the FSL, that'd be very encouraging. If he's held back to the FCL, that would be kind of a sign. If a 2023 third rounder is still in the FCL for 2025, that would be a concern, because you're not sending him to West Michigan. It's not like, oh, no, we're holding him back here just to let it warm up. It's just as warm on field one at Lakeland as it is at field two, because that's the difference that you're talking about here. So we'll see what that is, but that's the guy to keep an eye on, I think, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we sort of wrap this up, really good Tigers system. I think if you're a Tigers fan, this is probably the high point of the last decade for you. It's been quite a long time since you've had this much talent at the major league level and in the minor league level as well. For Jeff Ponce, for JJ Cooper, for all those out there watching on YouTube or listening on podcasts, please rate, like, subscribe, drop a comment, or any questions you have. Always appreciate any feedback. And, you know, of course, major shout out to all of our subscribers that allow us to do what we do every day. For Jeff, for JJ, this has been the Baseball America Podcast.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.